recent months, videos of Iranian women removing their headscarves in public have gone viral on social media. They're protesting the country's law that makes it mandatory to wear the hijab in public. And more than 24 arrests have been made from the protests since December. For inspiration, many Iranian women look to an iconic writer whose life, spirit, and work represented the struggle for equality. A new book tells the story of Farrukh Farrukhzad. Even 50 years after her death, she remains Iran's most iconic and controversial female poet. The author of the book is Jasmine Darznik. She wrote a historical novel called Song of a Captive Bird. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, I want you to do me a favor. Pronounce all the names correctly so I can do it right for the rest of the segment.
Sure. So I'll make it a little easy. Most people just call her Farrukh.
Farrukh, okay.
Yeah. And it's almost like a little, it's like a K at the end.
Okay.
And her last name is Farrukhzad, but you can call her Farrukh.
Farrukh, okay. When did you first become aware of her?
You know, when my parents and I escaped Iran in 1978, my mom smuggled a book of her poems in her suitcase. And that was one of the few books we had in my home. So I was, when I was growing up, I had a certain awareness of her. And there was a mythology around her always for many Iranian women. So that was the inheritance that I brought with me from Iran. Once I got to college, I was able to actually read her poems in the original Persian for the first time. And she was just a revelation for me. I had never heard a voice like hers before. Mm-hmm. And this was just so counter to the kind of images we started to see in the 80s and 90s right. of Iranian women. So here's this woman who's really bold, really confident, really audacious. And so it was just a real fascination that gripped me.
Did your mom, have you ever discussed with your mom why she brought that book?
You know, Iranians love poetry, and I think if I were hustling out of the country, I might also bring my favorite book of poems. Mm-hmm. So for my mother, as for many women of her generation, Farrukh was the poet who really expressed their frustrations and their desires and their ambitions. So I think it was, you know, partly because she loved the book and maybe she had a premonition she wouldn't be returning. Mm. But that particular poet for her represented every possibility that she had grasped for in her own life. And so I think she really wanted to take her with her where she was going.
For people who don't know about Farrukh, could you tell us a little bit about where she was born and into what circumstances?
Sure. She was born in 1935. She was born into a family that was more or less modest. Her father had been a colonel under Reza Shah. Mm-hmm. So she grew up in a very authoritarian household. She went to school until the 10th grade and was one of the first, you know, that was the generation that was just starting to go to school. But she didn't have any encouragement to become a poet. To the contrary, her family and I would say the greater culture really wanted to, you know, frustrate and shut down any desire that she had to become a poet. So she became a poet and a filmmaker entirely by her own wits and with her own will, and really battled all the way through and became now one of the most important women in Iran's history.
It's so interesting that it was completely self-motivated, it sounds like.
Yeah, I do think, though, that she, every time she heard no, she pushed back even harder. And she was living in a moment and in a culture that told her no continually. Mm-hmm. And every time, I think that fortified her somehow. I think that emboldened her. And she just reacted with more ambition, with more passion, with more conviction.
Was there any one instance or any one sort of catalyst for her feminist leanings and her feminism growing within herself?
I think the loss of her son. So when she began writing, more or less her husband had issued an ultimatum. You either stop writing or I'll divorce you or I'll separate from you. And that was a shocking ultimatum, I think, for her, because it also came with it the loss of her child. At that time, Iranian women didn't have a right to custody of their children when they were divorced. And so I think that pained her terribly, but I think it also galvanized her. I think it also really energized her, and it became the subject matter of many of her poems, and I think it was a animating force throughout her career.
Was it the anger around it? Was it the unfairness of it? What do you think?
Both.
Yeah.
I think the pain and the rightful outrage.
Early in the book, is a very dramatic scene. And I wondered if this was a true story, where her mother takes her and drags her into a situation where they're going to, these group of women are going to determine whether or not she's still a virgin.
Right. That is conjecture. Now, my mother had been a midwife, and she actually conducted these tests in the 50s and 60s in Iran. She conducted virginity tests. Mm-hmm. And so I know that Furukh had married hastily, and I thought to myself, what might have occasioned that kind of hasty marriage? It happened so quickly. And I thought to myself that in those days, it didn't take much for your family to suspect you.
It was her sister. Her sister mentioned something about a boy. Was that it?
It didn't take much. Yeah. I mean, they went to the movies one day and came back late. And so those exams were pretty customary, and they would have been necessary for girls as they married. That document, the virginity certificate, was something my mom had issued, hundreds of them. And so while I can't say that that definitely mm-hmm. happened to her, in those circumstances, it's very probable that something like that could have happened to her. And I also think, knowing what I do of Furukh, that she would have really fought back. And this comes with huge consequences in the novel. Her fighting back when she's subject to that exam then propels her into a real set of problems.
It's interesting that you said you took information that you knew, facts you knew that happened at that time, and then incorporated them into this fictional version of her life. Why did you decide to tell her story through fiction versus writing almost a biography?
Well, there wasn't sufficient information to write a biography. And I think to do it properly, I would have had to go to Iran, which is just not possible. It's just not possible for me. Mm-hmm. And I think as a novelist, it was actually fantastic, because all the places where there was just, you know, a bit of information or murky bits of information, that's where I could write into and to flesh that through with the imagination. And so I think that sort of that paucity of information opened up my imagination and let me tell maybe a certain kind of truth that you couldn't get at through biography.
What of the research that you were able to do, was there anything that you found that surprised you that you didn't know about her?
I did not know that she had participated in the protests that shook Iran in 1963, and those were a really important precursor to mm-hmm. the events of 1978-79. I do know from a documentary that was done of her that she was arrested briefly. This is not something I had known, and that really got me thinking about how she participated in the political uprisings of her time, and what might her participation have looked like, because there's no record of that at all left behind. All that's been erased, if ever it existed at all.
I'm talking to Jasmine Zarnouk about her new book, Song of a Captive Bird. It's a really interesting novel looking at one of Iran's most iconic female poets. If you could share with us how much Iran changed during Farouk's lifetime and why, and how important that is to the work she did, actually.
Absolutely. This is a really fascinating time that I think that Americans know of less, because mm-hmm. we tend to know about Iran from 1978, 79. In 1935, Reza Shah, outlawed the veil in Iran. And this was the beginning of a great modernization campaign. Furukh's generation is the first that becomes educated. She goes to high school. And she's the first generation whose women begin to enter the professions. But it's a half-changed world, because many in the country are utterly discomfited or disgusted with the changes that are occurring. They very much feel that women's place ought to be where it was, which is more or less in the home as mothers, as daughters. And so Furukh appears at a moment where we see this really fascinating interface between an old and a new version of Iran that then explodes in 1978. That is the issue. And women's place particularly becomes one of the real live wires in 1978-79.
I want to read a quick passage in Farouk's voice that you write. You wrote, "Because I was a woman, they wanted to silence the screams on my lips and stifle the breath in my lungs, but I couldn't stay quiet. I couldn't pretend to be modest or pure or good. By writing in a woman's voice, I wanted to say that a woman, too, is a human being."
Yeah.
That's so interesting. Was her poetry perceived differently by men and women?
Well, women in particular were drawn to Furukh in huge numbers. I mean, she was just fantastic. She was almost like a rock star, you know, especially as she advanced in her career. Their mothers weren't so keen on her influence, but the daughters.
Oh, interesting.
Right. So Furukh's contemporaries, young women, really latched onto her and found in her a really radical and exciting voice mm-hmm. of feminism and of human rights. And for men, I mean, I think also the younger generation of men, too, loved her poetry. But I think she had a particular draw for young women who, too, were finding their place in this half-changed world.
You were only 5 when your family moved to the United States?
Is that true? It is true.
Oh, my gosh. Did reading her poetry help you feel some sort of connection?
Absolutely. I can't imagine having written this book without a real intimate knowledge of her poetry. The poems are still so fresh. They're so still revolutionary. She's writing about sexuality. That was mm-hmm. one of her great innovations and revolutions, was she was writing about sexuality from a woman's point of view for the first time, I'd say not just in Iran, but the greater Middle East. And she's also writing poems that are politically critical of the regime. She's writing environmental poems. She's writing about nuclear disarmament. She really, her intelligence and her talent span so many fascinating subjects. And so I was absolutely enraptured by her poetry, and I can't imagine having written the novel without that real close connection to her words.
One of her most famous works, I believe it was called Sin, is that right?
That was the one that launched her poem Sin in 1955.
Is it as clear as the title says? Or you tell us a little bit about it, if you wouldn't mind.
It is. It's one of her earlier poems, and it's the poem, it landed like a bomb in the Tehran of her day.
Oh, I'm sure.
Because there have been many love poems. Love mm-hmm. poems were very common in Persian literature, but never had a woman written a love poem that was explicitly written from a woman's point of view. So she wasn't erasing herself in some sort of generic persona. She was disclosing the fact that she was a woman. You know from the poem that she's literally on top. And maybe the most shocking part of that poem is that she challenges the very notion of sin. So in a culture that's been defined, in which women's sexuality has been defined mm-hmm. hugely by the idiom of faith, she takes this notion of sin and she really upsets it. She really disturbs that notion. And it was shocking.
She was a disruptor before her time. Before that word was chic, right?
Yeah.
I'm talking to Yasmin Dermick about her book, Song of a Captive Bird. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how important and how influential she was for young women, but mm-hmm. certainly she was demonized during her career. What was that effect on her personally? And also, who were the people who were demonizing her?
Well, I would say it was nearly every man with whom she was close. So it began with her father, who felt deeply shamed. Everything she did ran counter to his idea of what she ought to do. She also ran afoul of her husband. She ran afoul of the literary society of her day, which was largely male. And she, at one point, she was actually institutionalized. She was put into a madhouse, as would happen,
right.
You know,
brilliant women.
With
yeah.
brilliant women yeah. who disturbed and upset the status quo. And she was dismissed when her poems were first published. She was called out for capitalizing on her sexuality, for she was sort of, I think nowadays we might say she was slut shamed, you know. So there is a lot of really, really nasty talk mm-hmm. around her and about her. And then maybe for her, the most hurtful accusation that she wasn't even writing her poems herself. So the better a poet she became, you started to hear these claims that she wasn't even writing these poems herself, that it was her partner who had penned these poems.
What would be the point of trying to neutralize her?
I think she represented the new woman, as you say, and I think for many that was still a deeply uncomfortable evolution of Iranian womanhood. This is also a version of womanhood that a lot of people feel is too much influenced by the West, in particular America, mm-hmm. and so they saw in Furukh the degradation of national womanhood, of honor, and in particular through this incursion of Western and American ideals. So she really touched on some nerves.
It sounds so. Now, please correct me. What's the proper way to refer to Persian or Farsi?
That you would refer to what's spoken in Iran as Persian, mm-hmm. And
English.
And Farsi is accurate as well for what is spoken in Iran.
Do you have one you prefer?
I say Persian.
Okay.
Yes.
What was it like to translate her poetry from Persian to English?
That's a really extraordinary experience. That's the closest I could get to her. It's a true meeting of minds when you meet a writer in their own language. And I was fortunate. I worked with my mom, actually, and we worked our way through almost all of her poems, and I was able to enter those poems in a way that would not have been possible in English. And I was able then also to gain a certain intimacy with the quality of her thought, the rhythm of her language. It was the closest I could possibly get to her.
Mm. What do you think is her legacy today?
She's still tremendously powerful for women in the Iranian diaspora and Iran still.
I want to know more about her.
Yeah. You know, she's still a lightning rod for the regime. Her poems are published, but all references to the body are excised from them, which is a statement, I think, of where the Islamic regime is about women and women's sexuality mm-hmm. in particular. And every year, there are thousands of people who go to her gravesite. Some years, they've actually had to shut down the cemetery because so many people go to pay their respects to her. So just from that, I think you can get a sense of how precious and important she still is.
It's a wonderful book, Song of a Captive Bird. Yasmin Darnik, thank you so much for joining us. Yasmin will be on Monday, April 23rd at 7 p.m., speaking at the Asian American Writers Workshop. That's at 112 West 27th Street. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.